Episode 106.
At the NACAT conference, we also don't have just the technical sessions, but we have the sessions on how to present information, classroom techniques, engaging students, and those kinds of things that I don't know of anywhere they could get that outside of the NACAT conference.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to On Point from Remarkable Results Radio, and a special interview from an auto care industry professional.
On Point.
Hello, aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriotto here, and thank you for listening and downloading this show. And welcome to episode 106 with Bill Haas of NACAT. Now, this episode is brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts and Garage Gurus for serious technical training and support online, on site, and on demand. Garage Gurus is everything you need to know. Find out more at fmgarageGurus.com. Ever thought about the value that every podcast guest has provided? The wisdom and experience shared unselfishly? If you are ready to go into business as a service professional, you get over 100 episodes to provide guidance from the guys and gals who've been there and done that. Specifically, check out every entrepreneur interview, raw, unfiltered, honest and wise. Follow every story, every word, to your own success. Now, I know you've heard of NACAT. When you think about automotive training schools, be it primary or secondary, you hear about NACAT, the North American Council of Automotive Teachers. In this episode, you'll hear from Bill Haas, the business manager of NACAT. He has a big resume, and you'll find it on the episode's page on the website. So why listen? Listen to Bill's solution to the technician shortage. Learn about the hard work it is to prepare people to have a career as technicians. And find out what the industry can do to help NACAT. This is a jammed-packed episode as we go from Bill's fascination with the automotive when he was just 12 years old through many iterations of an aftermarket career, right up to his passion for helping NACAT make a difference in training our future techs. Now, here we go. A warm welcome to Bill Haas, business manager of NACAT, the North American Council of Automotive Teachers. Hey, Bill, are you ready to go on point?
I'm ready, Carm. Let's hit it.
You have such an interesting history from the time you bought your first engine. Just give us a minute of that little old red wagon.
Yeah, I will. I was 12 years old, and at 12 years old, I had the, you know, I could hang out at the corner gas station. And so one day I watched two guys at the corner gas station take an engine out of a 58 Chevrolet and put another engine in it. And it's like, that's when I was infected by this disease of the automotive industry. But what was so cool about it was, as a young kid, watching these guys do all this work that I found so interesting. And it was just the watching it and smelling it. And I was hooked. But I had a really dumb question, I guess, and I asked the guy, what are you going to do with the old engine? And he said, well, we'll sell it. And I said, I'll buy it. And I went home, and you know, and I don't know if I got some money. I don't think it was a lot of money, maybe 20 bucks or something. But, you know, I got my first communion money or something. And I go back and I buy this engine. And so, you know, here it is, the middle of the afternoon, and my mother could tell this part of the story so well because she was at her kitchen sink that looked out with the window. She could look down Harrison Street, and here came her son Bill walking down the middle of Harrison Street with this Chevrolet V8 engine on the little red wagon, and he pulled it down the street and up the driveway.
And you were 12 years old, and you were pulling that engine. What were you, the Incredible Hulk?
Well, I was always a fairly good-sized guy, and I proceeded to take this thing apart. The thing that was so cool was I didn't just have an engine. I had everything. I had the carburetor, the distributor, the generator. I had everything. And so what people don't understand about me is I was so intrigued by this that what I did was I took everything apart as I could, had to convince my brother to help me carry the engine block down the basement because I couldn't do that by myself. And I would go to library and check out library books. And I would come home and I would read the library book and I would learn how a starter worked. And I would, you know, take the starter apart and put the starter back together. And I literally wore the screws out on the carburetor. And, you know, I really, you know, look at how I did that over the years, you know, in my teen years, and essentially self-taught myself automotive technology.
It's an amazing story. I love this. I could hear the rest of it and how how you forced yourself to, you know, be sure you learned it. I just would love to sit back, but we've got other really important things to get to, but you know, I think the story was so worth telling because you're an automotive guy, and the stuff that you're doing today with NACAT is just, you know, it's steeped in tradition, if you will. So you went out, you owned your own shop. Were you a typical good tech with little business knowledge?
Yeah, I was. You know, I really was very typical. I think I never considered myself a good tech. I always considered myself a great tech. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really prided my ability to do things that other people couldn't do, and I could fix car problems that other people couldn't fix. And that's what my reputation was. If you had something nobody could fix, you took it to Haas. And that's how I built my business. And so I did essentially go into business as a really good tech with no business sense.
But you told everyone, hey, listen, I've been doing this since I've been 12.
You know, as I know business better today from a marketing standpoint, today I would have been doing that. Yeah, I wasn't smart enough back then to do that, but that would have been a great angle.
Okay, that whole business sense thing, was there one big thing that you did to keep yourself out of the bays? Because that was the switch that says, hey, listen, I got to go work on my business, not in it. What did you do?
I really did. Through that transition, you know, as a working tech owning the business, and then as the business grew and eventually got to the point where I had to remove myself from the shop to really, as you hear so often, I had to work on the business, not in the business. Mm-hmm. So what I did to remove myself, I really made it impossible for me to work in the business.
What'd you do?
Because I went to work every day in dress slacks, button-down shirt, tie, and a sport coat.
Whoa.
And there was no way I could go out in the shop and go home, you know, take those clothes home from the shop, because I could have never paid that price.
You wouldn't have been allowed back in.
Right, exactly. So that's what I did. I created that barrier that said, Bill, it's hands off. You're not going in the shop.
Yeah. You've got so much great experience that when you do get up in front of technicians and shop owners to talk, I mean, you've been there and done that. You have so much credibility. Well, then you went on to be a GM contract trainer, and you went to work for ASA.
Yeah, so I spent a couple years with GM as a contract trainer, and then I, after about 3 years of that, I got a call that was really an incredible opportunity to work for the Automotive Service Association, and of course, I'd been with the association as a member and on the board of directors when I had my shop. Uh-huh. And then I had the opportunity to go to work for them. So in 2000, went to Texas, and their national headquarters was in Bedford, and I went on their staff as the mechanical division director, and then eventually on to the vice president of education and training for the association. So I spent 12 years with ASA and had an incredible career there.
You've got to be concerned about where we are today with our future talent and the techs we have.
Oh, absolutely. You know, in my other business as a consultant to repair shops, I hear about it all the time. So, you know, I see it, I hear it. I think it's the one thing that should be, you know, first and foremost on everybody's minds in this industry, because nothing's going to happen if we don't have people to actually do the work.
Here's great news. There's a new brake pad on the market that can stop a pickup SUV or CUV up to 50 feet sooner than other leading pads. And on top of that, it lasts up to twice as long as previous designs. Sound too good to be true? Well, Wagner Brake did it. They designed their new Wagner OEX brake pads that stopped up to 50 feet sooner than other leading brake pads. To prove it, they got Link Engineering, pretty much the industry standard on brake performance testing, and they got their proof. But Wagner needed more convincing. They asked 400 top technicians to put Wagner OEX pads to the test, where it matters most, in their shops and on their customers' vehicles. 99% said they saw a noticeable difference in the new brakes, and 95% said they'd likely recommend them to other service professionals for their customers. Now, soon you can get Wagner OEX brake pads in your shop. They'll be available nationwide with coverage for 95% of U.S. pickups, SUVs, and CUVs. Get the full story. Learn about the science behind Wagner OEX and check coverage. Go to WagnerBrake.com. We've done a lot of episodes on mentoring, a couple of really big episodes on building an apprentice program. Tell me about an apprentice program that you may have created.
Okay, so back in the mid-90s when I was still in the owned the shop, I was on the governor's school to work task force in the state of Wisconsin, and so we developed a youth apprenticeship program for automotive technology. And the model was such that we used a school that we would feed students to from surrounding schools, but we used one primary school where the student would go and they would get their, you know, education, the reading, writing, and arithmetic, and all the automotive technology. Mm-hmm. And in that program, they actually did an internship where, you know, they would do so many weeks of school and then so many weeks of the internship. And so it was modeled after what a lot of the automobile manufacturers use, like the Ford Asset or the GM Asset program. But we were actually doing this outside of the dealerships and using independent repair shops as the facilities where the students went and did their internship. So, you know, I spent several years in that, and we developed that program and had a lot of great success with it. And, you know, then like everything else, things either taper off due to a lack of interest or the funding changes. And when federal government funding dries up, usually there's not anybody that steps in place and says, oh, here, let's do this. And there wasn't a way to self-fund it and have it continue on. So, yeah, I've had a lot of experience on that side of it, because within that program, we had to develop, you know, those same pieces for the mentors. How do you select a mentor? How do you train the mentor? How do you have the right fit of the mentor matching the student? And, you know, the student reporting and, you know, the training for the automotive instructor, and then coordinating with the, you know, regular instructor of, you know, the reading, writing, and arithmetic to tie that into our industry. So it was a great experience, had a lot of fun doing it. I know that all over the country, I can still see those kinds of programs in place, you know, in different geographic locations. But I don't know that there's enough of it to fill the demand.
Well, then somewhere along the line, you knew Dan Perrin from NACAD, who was their leader at the time, and you'd speak at conferences. And he was going to retire, so they picked up the phone, and they say, hey, Bill.
Yeah, well, it was kind of interesting because, you know, I'd gotten to know Dan over the years just because he was an association executive, and I was an association executive, so our paths would cross frequently. And occasionally I'd get invited to speak at the NACAT conference, and so I really, you know, I really feel fortunate that I've now gotten that opportunity. And so, you know, for the last 2 years, I have been the business manager at NACAT that's replaced Dan Perrin in his retirement.
So how many members in the organization?
Oh, roughly, and you know, it can vary a little bit from year to year, but it's typically north of 450. You know, sometimes we've been as high as 600.
I'm sure that there's many, many listeners, because we have thousands of them all, in fact, all over the world, that would really like to know what NACAT's purpose is, what your driving force is.
Well, a real purpose, a primary purpose of NACAT is to, you know, really give the instructors a place to get that 20 hours of continuing education that they need to keep their program in their NATEF, you know, their credential from NATEF.
Right.
That's the primary thing. That was the number one reason that the group got together to begin with, was to say, okay, we've got this requirement by NATEF to do these 20 hours. We're all busy people.
Right.
How do we do this? And so that really led to the idea of, well, we'll have a group that becomes responsible for making that opportunity available. So what NACAT does is we do a conference for our members every July, the third week of July every year. You can count on it. This will be our 43rd year this July down in Pasadena, Texas. And this is the really cool part about this group, Carm. We get together as a family. I mean, these are instructors that come, that bring their spouses, that bring their children. Some of them come in RVs and camp. We all get together. We do some really fun stuff. And in the course of having that fun, we have the opportunity for our members to go to, you know, sessions throughout the day over the course of those couple days and fulfill that, you know, requirement of getting those 20 hours of continuing education.
If the instructor doesn't find a class locally through one of the big training companies or an aftermarket training company where they're invited to go, then they would come to the NACAT conference and absorb that training. And do you provide at least the 20 hours?
Oh, yes, we absolutely. I mean, we make sure that there's a minimum of that 20 hours is going to be available. Okay. So we'll run 12 concurrent sessions. So we actually get together Monday morning and we start with a business meeting for all of our memberships and actually conduct the association's business on Monday morning with our members attending.
Yep, yep.
We start Monday afternoon with the sessions. We'll run 12 concurrent sessions. We'll go Tuesday morning, Tuesday afternoon. We'll go Wednesday, and we'll go Thursday afternoon. We also have a trade show as part of this during the conference to learn about the latest and greatest and the things that are available for them in their classroom to help with their instruction of the students. At the NACAT conference, we also don't have just the technical sessions, but we have the sessions on how to present information, classroom techniques, engaging students, and those kinds of things that I don't know of anywhere they could get that outside of the NACAT conference.
You know, I guess you're right. Once you've become a certified teacher, where else do you go to learn the new technique?
Exactly. You know, and it's not just, you know, here's the really unique thing about our industry is this. Where do most automotive instructors come from? The industry.
Yeah, they come from the industry.
They were technicians. They were working technicians. So here's a challenge for us. We have this working technician, really smart guy, a lot of talent, incredible knowledge and so much experience. What a great individual to put in the front of the classroom as an instructor. What prepared them to be an instructor?
Yeah, I see that. Yeah.
Right? So we really have to use things like the NACAT conference for taking that individual with all that talent and all that experience and knowledge, but give them the tools for how to become an instructor.
Okay, so it's family, it's training, it's NATEF compliance, and it helps them with their skills as an instructor.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm glad you shared that. That's just really, really good and very important. What's your take on the technician shortage?
Well, I think it's huge. You know, there's a lot of challenges in this in terms of the technician shortage, not just with are there enough people coming into the industry, but we've got a lot of challenges in terms of retaining people in the industry as well. And so that's another part of the shortage, technician shortage, that I don't think we give enough consideration to. So I think as a whole, it's a big issue. I don't think unfortunately, there's no quick fix. But it's going to take a lot of people with a lot of effort to really get us where we need to be. And, you know, for me, that's the challenge I see that I don't believe that we have accepted as an industry. And what I mean by that is this. I think there's a lot of really good people with, you know, really great intentions that are working very hard, but we need more of them. We need everybody at every level to get engaged and participate at levels locally. You know, so, you know, we can do things on a large scale, but we're really only going to fix this problem when it gets right down in a grassroots kind of thing. We need the shop owners, the parts distributors, the parts manufacturers at a very local level really digging in and saying, this is going on in my community. How am I going to help?
I believe you would agree that being a top tech is hard work. Keeping up is a full-time gig, considering vehicle technology, repair procedures, and diagnostics. It's refreshing to know that Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Guru is there for you. It's been designed by and for technicians, the best in the industry. And did you know there's no other comprehensive program like this anywhere? A big part of the program is the nationwide network of Guru's on-site training and technology centers, and there, you get your hands dirty with the equipment and tools you use every day in real work-related situations. And if these great training programs aren't enough, you've got the Guru's On Demand app for quick, accurate assistance and information. And when the phone is just perfect, there's the ASE-certified bilingual Guru's On Call there to help. And this year, you get free stuff from the Garage Rewards loyalty program. You earn points towards gear from your favorite Federal Mogul Motor Parts' brand. And what is really great, it costs nothing to join, and you'll start earning points immediately. Head on over to fmgarageGurus.com and learn all about Garage Guru's training, support, and get in on the rewards. We've had this talk before on other shows.
Yeah. Sure.
And you are, you know, a perfect individual to bring on and confirm what everyone else is saying. And I'm sure the instructors get to the NACAT conference and they must say something to you. They must say, Bill, we need more students. We need more participation. And they can talk about it, but nothing seems to be getting done. And I think that may be, if we have to put our crystal ball on, now's the time.
You know, and it's interesting that you bring that up, because it's not always that we need more students. Now, you'd kind of think that if we're talking about the technician shortage, you'd say, well, there must not be enough students. But headcount, I don't believe, is as big an issue as some other things.
Most of the challenges that are going on in the independent side of the aftermarket for a technician shortage, I mean, there's a lot of students going off to the dealerships that they graduate from. And then if they just don't like that, they may be moving off to fleets, to government, and maybe not staying inside the for-profit aftermarket, but still turning wrenches. So you're saying enough students, but the participation from the independent base isn't what it should be.
Well, I'll give you an example. So I had a young lady at our conference last year. She's an instructor in a program. She's in the state of California, and she came to me during the conference, and students would, during their time in the automotive program, you know, have the opportunity to learn and be in a lab that was, you know, outfitted with the latest and greatest in, you know, equipment. And yet, when they graduate from the program and they go out to industry, that's not real world. So in other words, they learned and did their lab exercises in a lab that had a brand new wheel alignment equipment with the latest software in it. They learned in the lab with a scan tool with the latest version of software in it. Now what happens real world, once they educate or graduate and get a job, real world is they go into a shop that's got a piece of alignment equipment that's 15 years old.
Right.
Now they're working with a scan tool, and the scan tool is three software versions behind since it's been updated. And so in the way this was presented in the session, and so this young lady from this program in California said, well, Bill, that's not the problem in my school. In my school, we have that 15-year-old alignment equipment. We have that outdated scan tool. She said, I can't get enough support in my program for the funding to be available for us to, one, update equipment, or even worse, repair broken equipment.
What I've heard is that the advisory boards are the ones that really help drive that.
Absolutely.
Or is it the funding from the state or the college, however they get their money?
Well, you know, some of it's, again, it's local, right? I mean, some of that funding is done locally. Some of it's supported by a state, you know, and it's different in, you know, different states in terms of how that. But the bottom line is this. That doesn't change until business gets engaged and business tells the education, not the instructors in the program, but the school boards, the administrations, that I'm a business in this community. I am going to employ your product, that, because that's what this is really all about. That automotive program is going to deliver a product, and that product is an employee for some business.
Okay, so you sat down and you've done some personal reflection and said, if it was a utopian world, what would I need from AutoCare, from ASA, to really drive the improved equipment, getting the word out? Would you have a private little list of what you'd love to have or want people to do for you?
Well, and I think that's where the horsepower is. So when you mentioned earlier, you know, the NACAT role in this, NACAT doesn't have that horsepower. But there's a lot of organizations in our industry that have that horsepower. Auto Care Association, you know, the Automotive Service Association, all those groups like that. And I know I only mentioned two, and there's a lot of them, and I'm not trying to, you know, discount anybody, but there's a lot of them. But all of those members of those associations, so whether it's the members, you know, at the distribution and the manufacturing level that are members of Auto Care Association or MEMA or AASA or ASA, the Automotive Service Association, and their shop membership, they all derive the benefits of having an education systems across the country that are going to deliver the people that'll do the work that will help alleviate some of the problem we're having with the technician shortage. I think that that's where the horsepower is. The horsepower is for the ASA to push the message to their owner members that you've got to engage, you've got to support in whatever manner. So if that means you're going to support them financially, great. If that means you're going to support them by getting on the advisory council and attending meetings, and same thing for the Auto Care Association. For the Auto Care Association and you know, those others in the supplier distribution and manufacturing side of that, they've got that horsepower. They can push that message forward. They can make sure that their member companies are, you know, at the local level supporting these programs. There shouldn't be any issue locally for an automotive program that can't repair a piece of broken equipment or can't update outdated equipment. Somebody within that horsepower that I'm referring to should be able to help get that done.
Are we talking more post-secondary instructors?
The largest percentage of our membership is post-secondary, but we do have secondary.
And there's probably just as many challenges at the high school level.
I think there's probably more challenges at the high school level. You know, when we look at automotive programs in a secondary program, you know, it typically is an elective. And, you know, if you look at what a lot of the school systems are doing in terms of the hours available, in terms of getting your required credits versus time that's available for elective credits, there it's really becoming difficult to be able to get some of those electives. Plus, you also have the financial side of that, where, you know, you have the issues of school board looking at an automotive program and going, my goodness, look at the investment we have to make, you know, facility wise, equipment wise. Oh, and then somebody wants, you know, brings up, oh, and we have insurance to deal with. So, I mean, in a lot of communities, they're just finding it, I guess, simpler to say we can save a lot of money by not having an automotive program.
Yeah, there may be some of those programs in jeopardy.
Yeah.
You know, within the sound of my voice and your voice, you've been so passionate. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you being on and sharing your passion. anyone who's listening right now that can do something, that has some power to do something, and it doesn't mean if you own a shop or you're in distribution, you're in manufacturing, there's got to be a college or post-secondary high school in your town that does automotive technology. It's almost worth knocking on a door and having that refreshing smile and hello by saying, I really care about this program continuing. Is there anything I can do?
That would go a long way, Carm. That would go a long way, believe me.
And be able to put some money where your mouth is. And I don't mean money. I mean as much as it would be. You'd be like a magnet. Everybody, oh, wait a minute. There's somebody that wants to help us and do things. And it doesn't mean that you can immediately. If they're thirsty for someone with inside the industry to help, to guide, to show, to challenge, to listen, then we all have resources around us that we can start calling markers in, if you will, and
sure,
do something to help. And listen, we'll have your email in the show notes. Do you want to give it out?
Absolutely. My email is real simple. It's BillH@NACAT.org.
Well, I tell you, I enjoy this. And, you know, our pre-call, I had a blast talking to you. There's so many other things we didn't even cover. And maybe we need to get together and have you on again. So I want to thank Bill Haas, business manager of NACAT, the North American Council of Automotive Teachers. And we learned all about it today. And really appreciate you being on.
Well, Carm, thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate the chance to you know, get the word about NACAT out there and create some additional awareness in the industry.
Thanks, man. Hey, guys and gals, thanks so much for listening. Now, find additional show notes on Bill Haas, his resume, and links to NACAT on the show's episode page on the Remarkable Results Radio website. And that's also the place where you can subscribe to be an insider and get the pulse on every new episode released. And I would welcome you to the tribe. I really do appreciate your engagement with the podcast and would ask that you help spread the word. Uniting our industry for continual improvements is a goal, and I'm grateful for your support. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.